Hello and welcome to Crackpot Theories, the podcast where everything is plausible until proven otherwise. I'm Circa.
And I'm Sinead. And we're still very much deep down into lockdown, slowly losing our minds.
Unfortunately so, yes.
Yeah, so these episodes don't really have the same polish as our usual bunker episodes do, but we are doing our best and we hope that our loyal listeners appreciate that.
Yes.
But this is an episode that I've been looking forward to doing for quite a while because we're doing RuPaul's Drag Race theory.
Yes.
Now, we have to be a little bit careful with this, though, because technically we are talking about real people here. Even though they're like drag personas, so how real they are is debatable. But we still don't really want to hurt anybody's feelings by saying anything mean. So I'd like to just reiterate that this is a very silly podcast for very silly people. All of our theories are very, very silly and should not be taken at face value. And let's talk about Drag Race. How long have you...
I'm really excited because I really, really like Drag Race and it's very fun to be doing a theory about them and
Yeah, do you know, I think from our perspective, Drag Race is about the closest that you'll get to watching a televised cosplay competition, except it's actually interesting to watch. You know,
because like they have all the construction challenges and you have to make a dress out of what you can find and stuff. And that does remind me an awful lot of times when I've been crunching for a convention, trying to make a cosplay out of the scraps I can find in a bin.
Yeah, and I mean, it's also about embodying the persona that they've created, you know. So it's performance and it's construction all rolled into one, which is, and it also helps that it is an absolute drama bomb. And you know,
underrated art form.
Yeah.
An underrated art form, definitely.
Absolutely. And, you know, because it's such a drama bomb, you know how much I love drama. I love sitting and watching it from a distance. You know, not necessarily.
Armchair drama.
Yeah. So, to start with, like, how long have you been watching?
I've been watching it since the second season.
Ooh. That's a long time.
I have been watching it for a long time. I did miss the first season when it was airing, but we caught up with it eventually. And since it's on Netflix, it's really handy to keep up with it week by week. So we try to watch it. I'm a little bit behind on this current season. I feel ashamed. I'm about a couple episodes behind. But in general, we do try to keep up with Drag Race, like myself and our housemates and my husband. We all sit down and we're just like, ooh. Whose wig is going to be snatched today?
As you know, this podcast is behind Rock'em Sakura. We have to be. She's one of us. So no matter what happens, we will be behind her 100%. There is no other options for us, really. Although I pretty much like absolutely everybody on this season, for the most part, with...
I have my favourites and I have my definitely not favourites.
Yeah, and then we have the one that we're not going to discuss because we are not qualified to talk about that. Because even though we are part of the leg butt community, LGBT leg butt community, we are kind of like David Attenborough in that it's not really our scene, but we are going to observe it from a respectful distance.
Like bird watchers.
Yes, a little bit like that. So we are, you know, we're not qualified to talk about any recent controversy. So we're just not going to really touch that. We're going to just acknowledge it and then move straight on. I have my favorites, but there's nobody I really dislike as such. I'm kind of rooting for everybody and I'm sad when any of them go home.
Yeah, that's the thing about Drag Race is that you, no matter how like annoying somebody is or if they're not your favorite drag queen, you can always get behind them in some regard.
Yeah,
like everybody I got behind like in the last couple of seasons, but last season there was a few I didn't like, but even then I was still like, I hope they don't fail that miserably.
Yeah. Yeah, you're rooting for them kind of no matter what. You always want to see them doing their best. Now, last year, as you know, that was the year I was very, very sick. Now, and two friends of mine came over from Lithuania to visit. And I couldn't really go out with them anywhere. I couldn't kind of show them around Ireland because I couldn't walk very far. So they used to sit in and they asked me, had I ever watched Drag Race? And I said, no. And so we ended up watching, we started at season one and we got up to about season three before they had to go home. And then I just sort of binge watched the entire rest of it. And it was just, it was marvelous. It kind of cheered me up because I had been in such a bad place. And then last year, just before Christmas, I went to the Race Chaser live podcast recording and I got to meet Willem in Alaska.
That's really cool. I'm very jealous.
it was great, actually. You know, I told them how much they cheered me up while I was sick, and Willem asked me, was I doing better? And I just said to her, well, I can walk. And she immediately said, well, if you can walk.
Which... yes. There are words to live by that you should get on a t-shirt.
Yes, a little bit. She wasn't wrong. She also, because I didn't want to get my walking stick in the picture, she actually grabbed it and hid it behind her back while the picture was being taken. It was so lovely. Money well spent. I had a really, really good time. And then I got really salty because I was going to be able to meet Blue Hydrangea and Davina DeCampo and Gothy Kendall and Bag of Chips when they were going to be over here doing Frock Destroyers. Me and you were going to be going to that.
Yes, we were supposed to. Yeah. But unfortunately, the quarantine attacked.
Yeah, they cancelled it because of the Black Plague. And I was sad and quite salty. But I've more or less gotten over that now. Like, there's always going to be opportunities to meet them because they're very eager tourers, which is great. Like, the enthusiasm after the seasons for pretty much every contestant, like, it seems like they all really like meeting their fans. And they're all really, really active. So, you know, that's always a nice thing to see. Anyway, we'd better get into the theories because we're 7 minutes in now and I haven't mentioned a theory at all. I've actually got three theories that are they're all kind of equal levels of insane, but they're more plausible to start with and then just more outlandish as time goes on. So our very first theory is, if you're kind of following Drag Race, you notice that in the off season, there does tend to be a bit of drama. Now, you could kind of shrug this off as these are drag queens. These are naturally dramatic people. But I think there's an extra level there. I think, you see, because sometimes the drama involves people who, when you've seen them on their seasons, they've actually been quite quiet and very nice and quite placid. And then you kind of hear of them, you know, getting into some sort of trouble. I'm not going to name names. And I'm not going to mention any kind of drama that they've gotten into, but, you know, suddenly out of nowhere, there's beef, there's Twitter fights, there's arrests, there's, you know, people falling out with each other and hissy fits and all this stuff. And then, like, people discussing it then online, in particular on Reddit. And it just seems like there's always something new happening, and it particularly happens while there's no season airing. Now, what my thought here is that there is a Hunger Games setup. After...
sorry. Oh my god, so are they like the capital?
A little bit, yeah. I think what's going on here, right, is that once they've signed the contracts, that it says that a person is going to be picked at random. Could be anyone, and their job is that they have to manufacture some sort of drama. They have to pick a fight with someone, or they have to get in trouble, or they have to cancel a gig with no explanation, or they have to turn up late for a meet and greet. Just something to get people talking. So it's not like a Hunger Game where anybody will die. It's just literally somebody has to drop the drama bomb somewhere.
Do you know what this reminds me of? it's, I don't know how much you know about it or not, but you know professional wrestling, like the WWE and that?
Yeah, yeah.
They have to all have these ongoing storylines in kayfabe where they have to fight on Twitter and they have to, like, pretend to be mortal enemies in public, even though they could be the best of friends in private and that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the drag race kayfabe.
Yes, a little bit like that, yeah. You see, because, like, it's, there are queens that don't seem to get into any drama at all. And you might just think, oh, well, you know, they're lucky that they've managed to escape it. And then there's ones that seem to just cause drama wherever they go. Again, I'm not naming names here. But, you know, when you hear a bit more about, even the ones that do get, seem to get involved in a lot of drama, they seem like really nice people. You know, their friends like them a lot. They're really nice to their fans. That kind of thing. So that makes me think that there is a couple of grenade jumpers in here, in that they will quite literally throw themselves onto the drama bomb in order to shield somebody else from the drama. There, I think there's a couple of them, and I actually think that Willem might be one of them. Because Willem doesn't shy away from kind of tackling people on things. And Alaska, then by contrast, seems very relatively drama-free. So I do think that Willem sometimes does take the bullet for Alaska every now and then. Because if Alaska's name had come up in the... Like, as far as I can see, Alaska hasn't been involved in any drama that's been off the screen. There was a little thing during All Stars 2 where people were kind of annoyed about choices that she was making and ways she was behaving, even though it's a reality show, so you kind of have to expect these things a little bit. But then off screen doesn't seem to be very much drama there, so I do sometimes get the feeling that Willem is taking that drama bullet for Alaska because they're such good friends, which is very, very sweet if I'm right. Which, you know, I know I'm not right, but it's a theory, so I'm allowed to think about it.
Theory.
Yeah, but what's really, really funny about it is you haven't really watched any of the All-Star seasons, have you?
I haven't actually. All-Stars is one of the things that I need to get around to watching, but I never seem to find the right time. It's the same with, like, the behind the scenes one. What's it called?
Untucked,
yeah. I don't watch a lot of Untucked either, even though I've heard that's where the funniest, like, outtakes and stuff come from. But I usually watch the main series on Netflix because I'm a filthy casual.
Yeah. I've watched a lot of Untucked, and I have watched all of the All-Stars season. All-Stars 2 is still the best. But then the other ones do have their moments as well. But in All-Stars 1, Chad Michaels from Season 4, on Season 4, she got quite a bit of criticism for being kind of too polished, in that she was kind of too regal, almost. It just seemed like she almost wasn't real. She was just kind of like this robot of drag excellence. But then on All-Stars 1, she got very, very silly. And it was great because apparently she had gone away and either read the books or watched the films of The Hunger Games. And she kept quoting it and talking about it in all the talking head.
She's on tier theory.
She's one of us. It's like she read it in the contract and she was just like, oh, it's like the... Well, what is this, Hunger Games? And then she watched it and she just enjoyed it so much she kept gushing about it. And it was beautiful because it kind of humanized her a bit. And it was adorable because, you know, the way when you're really into something and you start gushing about it to people who have no idea what you're talking about. Like in our last episode, yes, about Gundam.
Oh, yes. I am very much prone to that. If, like, anyone ever meets me in person, I just, like, let me talk to you about my new hyperfixation. And that'll all of... I'll talk about for weeks on end and annoy the shit out of everybody.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. Well, you see, this is what, like, Chad Michaels, after being, like, this epitome of drag excellence for an entire season, and then once they got on All-Stars, they were just like, hey, have you heard of Hunger Games? I love it so much. And it was just, it was adorable. But it's possible that maybe they put that clause in after All Stars 1. Because they realized that people like drama, and that if they can keep up the interest, because you know when something's been off the air for a certain amount of time, people start kind of moving on to other things. You know, you've had that experience with Yuri on Ice, unfortunately. I know that much.
Yes, we're currently going into our fourth year of no Yuri on Ice content. I'm not mad, you're mad. we were supposed to have the Yuri on Ice movie this year for the Olympics, but we got a sudden case of the coronavirus, so now that's put off indefinitely, and that could be another year with no Yuri on Ice content.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to be laughing at your pain, but I am laughing at your pain.
I am in so much pain. I just rock back and forth in my containment unit, crying myself to sleep. There's no idea.
But, you know, it's okay. But it does seem kind of like Drag Race does seem to almost want to fill in the pockets of the non-air time with other content. So they had Drag Race UK and then the regular edition Drag Race. They've got Untucked and then they have All Stars. So they've cornered a lot of the schedules, but there has to be pockets of time where there's no Drag Race airing. And it's not like in the Great British Bake Off when they kind of just do it once a year and then as soon as it comes on, everybody's watching, you know? They kind of need to keep the focus of the people that are watching the series. And I think this is how they do it with the drama bomb, the random selection drama bomb. So you do get really weird incidences of kind of very quiet, very placid, kind of non-controversial queens just suddenly getting into some sort of trouble or having some sort of beef with somebody else out of absolutely nowhere. And it just then makes me think, oh, they didn't have a grenade jumper to help them. Or, you know, maybe the grenade jumper is already knees deep into some other drama and can't take a second drama bullet for them. You know, it's just amusing for me to think of kind of like a drag queen getting picked out of the fishbowl and then another drag queen just stepping up and going, I volunteer as tribute.
I volunteer to have my wig snatched.
I volunteer to get into a massive Twitter slap fight with some randos. I'll do it for you because I love you.
Oh, God.
Yeah. That was my first theory. Now, funnily enough now, Chad Michaels, despite kind of being the germ where this theory blossomed from, has gotten into very little drama from what I can see, because I would have thought that, you know, she'd be the first one to volunteer as tribute, kind of, because it does seem to me like she kind of wants to be Katniss a little bit, but maybe she actually just wants to be Effie Trinket. Who knows?
Yes. Oh, dear.
Yeah. So that was my first theory. My second theory involves one drag queen in particular. Alyssa Edwards from season 5 and also from All Stars 2 and from the web series Alyssa's Secret. One of my all-time favorite queens, because she does seem to just be kind of inherently ridiculous, but also a really delightful person. Personal feelings on Alyssa Edwards, would she be one of your favorites as well?
Definitely. She has a lot of personality that came out, and I love the Alyssa's Secrets, because one of the times that I wasn't feeling well myself, I just put that on YouTube after you showed it to me.
Oh, yeah.
And I stayed for like a week solid just watching Alyssa's Secrets, laughing at them. So I think some of my favourites would be like Sasha Velour, I really liked.
Yeah.
So, I know. Yeah, Alyssa Edwards and Bianca Del Rio, of course.
Yeah, do you know?
Are solid me.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think there's a sort of a kindred spirit thing there with Alyssa for me and possibly for you as well, in that she seems to be one of these people that things happen to. You know? That she has all these.
Very much so.
That's the basis of Alyssa's Secret, is it's just her telling stories completely unscripted. And I mean, that's half of our stand up. repertoires is we practice it a little bit, but it's usually all stuff that has happened to us. Like, you know, did I tell you the time that I accidentally confessed to being a Satan worshipper to a whole bunch of Jehovah's Witnesses kind of thing?
Yeah, oh.
True story.
A lot of my stand-up is just that. It's like, well, this one time I got very drunk and...
Yeah, but my theory for Alyssa, again, because this is a real person, I have to be nice and not mean. But this is this is hard to do without it sounding at least a little bit mean. I think...
Controversial.
Slightly. Again, I have to reiterate, this is a very silly show for silly people, and these are very silly theories. And this one is particularly silly. I think Alyssa may be possessed.
What?
I think Alyssa may be possessed. Now, not by a demon, because, you know, she's been quite open that she's a Christian. I'm not sure exactly what denomination of Christian, but she's very much a God-fearing person. I think she might be possessed by some sort of entity, just based on a couple of things that I've seen. One of the things that you hear about her is that she's always late. She never turns up on time. And when you watch the seasons that she's in, she seems like she's incredibly easily distracted, especially by mirrors. It's like... Yeah, she's just making faces at herself in the mirror. Now, if you are an entity that does not have a physical form and you have managed to possess a physical form, I would imagine that you would spend quite a lot of time looking at yourself in the mirror just going, what is this? Oh my God, these are eyes? It's brilliant having eyes. How did I get on so long without having eyes? This is fantastic. Kind of. And then make...
Eyebrows.
Yeah, and then, you know, like... The whole making weird faces in the mirror, which seems to be a really fun hobby for her. I mean, I don't like doing that. I like to look good in mirrors, and if I don't look good in the mirror, I just kind of go, ugh, and then I turn away. I think that's kind of a natural reaction for a lot of people. But she seems happy to look in the mirror for hours on end, just making faces at herself. So I'm thinking that's a not quite human behavior. Now, if you take into account, like, she's, you know, Justin the guy, and then Alyssa Edwards the drag queen, and then also the entity that's possessing her, that's three different personalities in one body. So yeah, of course it's going to take a lot of time to kind of get up and get out and actually go and do your drag job. If you're trying to keep three separate personalities under control, or they keep switching. Another piece of evidence I have for this is that when season five started, there was sort of like this built-up rivalry between herself and Coco Montrese, in that they were always kind of making little remarks at each other. Coco in particular seemed to get quite head up about things. But then a lot of the time it seemed like Alyssa forgot that they had a rivalry. Because
yes,
there was a point in Untucked when they're all kind of having an argument with one other queen, and either Coco or Alyssa said something, and Alyssa held out her hand to get a high five from Coco, and Coco just left her hanging for a good 5 minutes. And it's just like, she couldn't understand why Coco wasn't giving her a high five. That was brilliant. But then, like, you did see them kind of out of the corner of your eye every now and then in the workroom, just kind of talking to each other, like everything was normal. A little bit, and then they kind of, like, you know, they rekindled their friendship by the end of the season, but it always seemed to me that Alyssa could never remember that they were supposed to be fighting, because she just was too easily distracted by pretty much everything, you know. But
I like this theory, I like it.
Thank you. But you know what my ultimate evidence for, all right, and this is purely coincidental, probably, but there could be something to it. You remember the film Hereditary?
Yes.
So you know the creepy little girl in that?
Yes.
Who keeps...
A very, very brilliant actress, but terrifying.
Fantastic actress, but one of the creepiest children from a horror film since Damien. You know that noise that she kept making? The kind of noise?
Yeah.
Yeah, Alyssa does that all the time too.
Suspicious.
In Hereditary, it was a sign that the little girl was possessed by the demon King Paimon. So...
It's like, even in The Grudge, they had, like, a vocal noise that they made. And there was another possession horror movie that did have, like, the clicking sound, but I can't quite think of it off the top of my head.
Well, like, a lot of possessions, stories of possessions come with, you know, records of strange sounds making strange noises. The Exorcist was full of them. The, like, the Foley for that film was insane. Like, you had swarming bees, you had pigs going to slaughter, all coming out of the voice of this one girl. And she had a lot of vocal tics in that, too. So I think it's just been a record, it's been a thing that's been recorded about people who are possessed by something, that they have very odd vocal tics. But just kind of, Alyssa gets away with it being completely benign because she's a drag queen, and they kind of expect them to be a bit, you know, off the wall. So it goes completely unnoticed, and then has a whole bunch of people trying to imitate it. You know, and that's quite beautiful, I think. You know, it's like, it, you know, if you are an entity of some sort and you're looking for a body to possess, possess a drag queen, because nobody will know.
And you get to be all fabulous, and if you're pulling any weird faces, you can cover it up with the really dramatic makeup, so nobody will know.
Yeah, and not to mention, I mean, the sheer amount of debauchery you can get up to and say, well, it's fine, I'm a drag queen, I'm allowed to do all this kind of thing. You know, it's the perfect thing. I don't know why entities possess children when it would be so much more fun to possess a drag queen. But, you know, that's really up to them.
I mean, if I was a spirit that was able to possess somebody, I would 100% do a drag queen.
Yeah.
It would be great crack.
It would be great crack. That's the thing. So, you know, it just kind of flies under absolutely everybody's radar. But yeah, so that was my theory. Obviously, that is a silly theory for silly people, and hopefully no offense has been caused. But I just want to put out there that we do 100% not believe that Alyssa Edwards is possessed by anything, especially a demon. So
I think the only thing she's possessed with is fabulousness.
Well, yeah, that too. okay, but then here's my last Drag Race theory, and this one is going to require some stretching. Okay, so I hope...
Oh, so we've got to limber up.
Yeah.
Stretch out our muscles for this reach.
Yeah, because this is a serious, serious reach. This is, and it also requires a lot of explanation. So, I'm assuming you remember a decent amount about season 3.
Yes.
That was the one that Raja won.
Yes.
Okay, so... Midway through, there is a lip sync between Manila Luzon and Delta Work. And Delta Work has already lip synced twice. She is an excellent lip syncer, very, very intimidating person to go up against. At this point, Manila has not lip synced at all. And the two of them have just lost a comedy challenge. The song that they are lip syncing to is the song MacArthur Park, but it's the Donna Summer version of MacArthur Park. And it starts out, and Delta is doing her best disco diva. She's doing a really, really good job. Very emotional, very evocative. And then Manila just kind of goes completely hog wild and seems to channel something about the song that just elevates it that little bit more. And I have an explanation for this. So I got you to listen to both the original MacArthur Park and the Donna Summer version. What are your thoughts on those songs?
It is such a dramatic song. Even just the starting portion of it, it sounds like they're going to talk about something devastating or something like really serious, like such broken hearts. And then it's like, are they singing about cake?
Yeah. Okay, so the original song was written by a guy who'd just broken up with somebody, and this was in around the time when he was doing a lot of things for fun in parks. And he just sort of had this very kind of wallowy moment where he was in MacArthur Park and he was just kind of observing things. And it looked like the park was melting because of whatever he had taken. So he just kind of wrote it all down as it happened. That's where you get the mention of the old men playing checkers by the trees and the yellow dress foaming and the cake melting. So that song is about a breakup, and all the things that he talks about are symbolic. When Donna Summer sings that song, she is genuinely singing about a cake.
100%.
And like, do you
listening to the two versions, the Donna one was significantly better, I thought, and just the absurdity of the fact that she is a very strong vocal voice, she's like a very strong singer, and it was like speaking about cake melting is a
okay, yeah.
It was an experience. I loved it.
But Sergey, here's the thing. Do you know why I know she's singing about a cake?
Why?
Because what she's channeling in this song is a little known phenomenon that I like to call Baker's Madness. And I have experienced Baker's Madness many a time. And I believe okay. that in that lip sync, Manila channeled baking madness. So what happens here is, now, when I talk about this, I'm going to talk about when I made your wedding cake, because that was the peak of my baking madness. So, for our listeners, I bake quite a lot. I'm very proud of my baking. I especially when I make really nice, highly decorated cakes. And Sergey asked me if I would make the wedding cake for her wedding. And I absolutely said yes. I said I'd love to. Now, Baker's Madness is a kind of a halfway point between ultimate terror and a sort of very odd triumph, because you start off thinking everything is going wrong with this cake and there is no way I'm going to be able to fix it. And then also, I am going to fix this, come hell or high water. There is going to be something that I can do. And that's where the song, when it reaches crescendo, when it starts off, Donna Summer is singing beautifully and very melancholy, and then she does this sort of primal scream. And that's when the triumph takes over, where you think, I'm going to fix this. So when I started making your wedding cake, you see, we were between houses at that point, and we'd moved out of our old house, the new house wasn't ready, so we were temporarily living in a house that belonged to a friend of ours, a little sort of, just a kind of a cottage that they owned. And the oven in that cottage was about 700 years old, I'd say. And it could only fit one cake at a time. And I was making 8 cakes for your wedding cake, separately. I also had to make a massive vat of Swiss meringue buttercream. And when I started with that, like, we'd gone to the shop, we got all the ingredients and everything, and I bought a bottle of egg white because I thought it'd speed up the process. Didn't realise at the time that egg white, the bottled egg white is pasteurised, so it will never whip up so that you can make meringues. And that is infuriating, because why would you put a bottle of egg white just in a bottle and not make meringues with it? That doesn't make any sense. So this means that I'm going to have to, like, if I want to make Swiss meringue buttercream, I'm going to have to separate all these eggs and just have this massive bowl of random egg yolks to do what with? Who knows? I don't even have time to do anything with these egg yolks. So I was making one cake at a time, and then every time it came out, I was going to have to crumb coat it and shave it down and stack it and put dowels in it. And time was ticking by, and the kitchen was a mess, and I kept screaming at the dog to get out of the kitchen because the dog couldn't be in the kitchen, but there was no kitchen door, so I couldn't keep the dog out of the kitchen by any way except screaming at the dog. So you can hear the madness in my voice as I'm speaking.
Yes, you can definitely get the waves of PTSD just coming off you.
Okay, but you know, that part was fine. I made the cakes, I made the ganache, I made a different buttercream, I covered the cake, front coated and everything. I wasn't rolling any fondant on it until I got to your house. And the next day, I went to your house and I was trying to finish off the decorations in your house while you were getting ready for your wedding. And that was another layer of madness. Because everybody was running around trying to get organized, trying to finish everything up. There was a child crying in the background. There was, like, I think it was one of those stupid YouTube videos with the Five Finger Family. You know the one, Daddy Finger, where are you?
Yeah.
Playing over and over and over. Yes, yes. Over and over and over again. And he was screaming in the background as well. And your sister-in-law was singing The Youth of a Nation at the top of her voice for the best part of 2 hours. And
I'm so sorry.
I was trying to desperately roll out fondant and roll it on top and put the flowers down and secure everything, and just it was complete and utter MacArthur Park, because the whole time I did that song was playing in my head, because it's just like midway between the melancholy of the cake going wrong and the triumph of actually managing to salvage it from the brink, along with all the stress that was building in my head and threatening to give me an aneurysm. That song is the ultimate expression of when a bake has gone wrong. And if you watch the Great British Bake Off, when people's bakes are going wrong, you can almost hear MacArthur Park playing in the background.
You'll never have that recipe again.
Yeah, but then it's just, oh no! And then, yeah! The primal scream bit, where they just go, this has all gone wrong, but I'm going to run with it anyway. I'm going to try and fix it. I've got 2 minutes to go. My icing is melting,
it's
but I don't care.
It's still good.
It's just a little airborne. It's still good. Yeah, but I think that what happened there was Delta, when she did the lip sync, because this is still a Drag Race theory and not a Great British Bake Off theory. Delta was taking this at face value that it's a Donna Summer song and that she's going to do it in Donna Summer style, but Manila went to a place deep down where she made some sort of a baked good and it went horribly wrong and she served it anyway and it was okay, kind of thing, because that is the only way you can accurately portray MacArthur Park as it is meant to be portrayed. Oh my god.
Well, if it is anything, a lot of people at the wedding did really like the cake and it was delicious.
Thank you.
So there's that. It was a My Little Pony cake, so it was amazing and majestic, and it was actually so much more special than any cake we would have gotten in a store, because it was made by my best friend.
Oh, thank you. But the fact that it was My Little Pony cake, I remember going to the storage unit where, because you told me that you didn't have a cake topper, like, I think this was 2 days before the wedding. And I was like, okay, well, I'm sure I have some My Little Pony somewhere. So I went to a storage unit and I found them and I made them a little tuxedo and a little wedding dress so that they'd match the rest of the cake. And that was another layer of madness on top of all the madness. Like, what I wanted was, I wanted to make sure that it was as special as it could be and that it was up to my own very strict standards. But generally, when you're making anything with that kind of pressure, that's when the baking madness hits. Because anything that goes wrong is disastrously wrong, kind of thing, you know? Like, when you're watching the Great British Bake Off, whenever people, they tend to hit that madness level when they're making caramel. Now, I have never messed up caramel, which is kind of a miracle. But caramel is one of these things that is so, so easy to mess up. And also, it burns if you get it on your skin. And usually, if you're waiting to see when the MacArthur Park is hitting, it's hitting when the caramel is being done. Yeah. That's when they're
like lava. If you ever get it on your skin, it's literally like lava or burnt plastic.
Yeah.
And it sticks and burns and you can't get it off. And it's just, it's the hot glue gun of baking.
Yes. And just as sticky as well. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. Well, again, if you're watching the Bake Off and they're making caramel and they've messed up their caramel, you can just about hear the strains of MacArthur Park start to play. And then they do that triumph thing when they go, okay, I'm tossing it, I'm starting my caramel again. And then that's when they go into the Donna Summer disco bit. Because there is that kind of shred of hopelessness and also triumph that is unique to baking. Now, I actually ran this theory by a person who had been on the Great British Bake Off. Bryony was her name. And I contacted her on Instagram just to kind of run it by me. She was perplexed. And she didn't really give me an answer one way or the other. But I think I may have brought up some traumatic memory for her, unfortunately, of, you know, because even if you are an amazing baker, things go wrong with baking all the time, and it cannot be helped. You know, every now and then your cake will be left out in the rain and you will never have that recipe again. Oh no. Yeehaw.
Kind of yes. Thing. Oh my gosh.
It's one thing that if I ever do get to meet Manila in person, I don't think they've ever done an Irish tour, but I'm not 100% sure about that, but I will ask her about it. And ask her if she was actually channeling a baking catastrophe in order to embody that actual moment.
It would be just amazing if they said that they were. That would actually just make my entire year.
Do you know what I also think? I think it might have been brownies. There's something about the look in her eyes that says it was brownies. I don't know what it is, but I almost get a brownie sense from her, you know?
Yeah.
There was a couple of seasons back on the Great British Bake Off when they were making baked Alaskas, and one of the contestants took another of the contestants' ice creams out of the freezer, and, like, the whole thing melted and into a little puddle, and that's, like, the ultimate someone left the cake out in the rain moment.
Yeah. It just disintegrated.
Yeah, it was a big scandal. As far, like, the Great British Bake Off is like the polar opposite of Drag Race in terms of drama. Because everybody's on really friendly terms. Nobody really has any tiffs with each other. They don't tend to tape them crying or anything like that. In fact, there's actually a thing that they said about the old BBC series is that when somebody was kind of having a teary moment, or they were having a bit of a meltdown, or they were just really upset or really emotional about something, that either Mel or Sue would stand over them cursing or saying the names of brand name products in order to get that bit just completely unusable on film, so that it'd never make its way into the TV show, because they couldn't air it with a swear, and they couldn't air anything with an actual brand name. So they just, you know, stand there while somebody's crying and go, oh, Nike, Adidas, Starbucks kind of thing, just to make sure
that's very cool.
Yeah, like, could you imagine? They'd never do that in Drag Race, you know.
No. I couldn't see that happening, unfortunately. They're probably like, this is sponsored by Anastasia Beverly Hills. Oh, yeah. And somebody just sobbing in the corner.
Oh yeah, but like the amount of kind of fights and tears and meltdowns and all the rest, and people kind of, you know, talking about traumas that they've suffered, and you never get that in the Great British Bake Off. But another thing is, in the Bake Off, people tend to kind of help each other. Like, you'll see three people kind of huddled around taking one person's biscuits off the tray so that they're ready in time, kind of thing, or they're trying to kind of steady the cake so somebody can put a dowel in. And I mean, there's been a couple of times on the Bake Off where somebody has helped somebody else, but then you also have a couple of times where they've gone, yeah, their costume's falling apart. Girl, I told you should have been ready before this, kind of thing.
Let me pin you in.
Yeah, just a little bit. So they are like kind of polar opposites, but it's just kind of funny to me that it's sort of intersected in that really weird way with that one lip sync. And then again in Drag Race UK when Blue Hydrangea did Mary Berry for a Snatch Game.
Oh my god, Mary Berry. What a legend.
It was beautiful. Also, Something Wong, drag queen Something Wong, did David Attenborough for Snatch Game.
Are you serious?
I am serious. You should watch Drag Race UK. It's brilliant.
Oh my gosh.
And because
you know my feelings about David Attenborough.
Oh yeah, I know. I know you want to be him, more or less.
Revenge will be mine.
Yeah, where was it? Well, yeah, like, I know that, I have completely lost my train of thought now. We were talking about cake. Where was I?
Yes.
Help me here.
Did you leave your theory out in the rain?
No, do you know what it is? I can't see your face. And it is very, it's so hard to stay on topic when I can't see your face. You know, so it just makes everything slightly more awkward, but we're going to have to stick with it, you know. I am doing a lot of baking at the moment because I'm stuck indoors, so I'm also doing a lot of sewing. So I'm kind of like between the two worlds. I'm between Drag Race and between the Bake Off, in that I'm kind of embodying both at the moment, because the clothes that I'm making are all made out of the spare fabric that I had in the house, so they all look a little bit kind of out there. And then I'm making mostly bread here, you know, because my father is paranoid that we're going to run out of bread.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's quarantine. Everyone's running out of bread.
Or milk. Yeah, I'm going to be making my own yeast, actually. Hello?
Okie dokie.
Okay, I was wondering if you actually caught that, but then you were just kind of like, I don't know how to take that. You know you can make your own...
I just don't.
Well, you know you can make your own yeast, don't you?
I was unaware, and now I'm too afraid to ask.
No. Don't go there in your mind. It's different.
Well, anyway, anywho.
No, like, all you do is you get some flour and some water, and you mix it together, and then you put it in a press, and every couple of days, every day you feed it just a little bit more flour and water, and it develops into yeast. Like, people, if you do this for, like, 6 months, you have an amazing yeast to make your bread with. There's actual bakers that have yeast cultures going back hundreds of years.
Mother of God.
Yeah, there you go. Like, this is an educational podcast, kind of, every now and then, because you learned something today. But people are kind of buying up all the fast-action dried yeast in the shops, so I figured if I'm going to keep making bread, I'm going to need to make my own yeast.
Fair enough.
Okay. Yeah, see, here's the thing, right? When you do these long silences, I don't know if you've actually heard what I said or if you're just not reacting to it.
I did not hear what you said, but I'll just take it as fair enough.
I was still talking about yeast.
Anyway, we are coming up to the end of our episode.
Yes, yes, we are. That went off on some very bizarre tangents. That was fun.
It did. Thank you so much, everyone, for watching, for listening. We do apologise again that our audio is not the best quality at the moment. I hope you can forgive us and bear with us while we're currently in containment, as the whole world is in lockdown and we cannot visit our bunker. So I do appreciate it, and I'm sure Sinead appreciates that you're still listening, even though we sound like Sir Buckethead at the moment. You can find us on Buzzsprout, on Spotify, we're on iTunes, you can talk and chat to us on Twitter, on Tumblr, on Instagram, and we have a YouTube. So if you want to share any theories with us, please contact us on any of our social media platforms. We'd be more than happy to chat with you. Also, if you really like our podcast and want to support us to do more, please leave us a review. If you want to tell us we're terrible, you can also leave us a review. We don't judge. And that's the end of this theory. We hope to be back next week with some more theories. Anything to add?
No, I think you pretty much summed it up. Really. Okay, yeah.
This has been Crackpot Theories. The truth is out there. It's even weirder than you think. And I'm sorry.
What are you sorry for now?
I'm just sorry. Anyway, see you then.
Bye.